Sa ma ka ma ka. speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not busy with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later improve, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are great or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as the mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, upwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, freed from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Very good. So, we have now questions.
Very good. Oops.
Aha. Very good. No. Okay. Very good. I thought it was for my feet. Anyway, here we go. Dear Ajahn, I have tried many times today with mindfulness. Every time I notice I'm in beautiful breath. I could not stay long. Either the breathing comes back or I have to swallow my saliva. A feeling of not being able to stay as it is. Please help advise if I could do something about it. Swallowing saliva. Because that's a problem which some people have. And if you have that problem, there is the solution. I think I say this every time. I said it in the executive retreat in Penang. The dentist machine. They put this little thing in her, yeah, go. So get one of those when you're meditating, and then you don't have to worry about your saliva at all. Now, sometimes this happens if you want to swallow your saliva. If you do feel like swallowing your saliva, swallow it straight away. Because once you think that, you're going to swallow it sooner or later. So swallow it, get it out of the way, and then you want to swallow again. Just keep on swallowing whenever you want to, and after a while it just disappears by itself. So it's just a pause. And then eventually you go back to beautiful breath. And not feeling able to stay as it is, you eventually get to stay as it is. Remember, you're building up peace. The more you are peaceful, the more you let things be, the more you are kind, the more you're forgiving, the more you let go of the past, you'll finally get more and more peaceful. And it's not something you do, it's just something which happens. The more you meditate, the more easy it is to stay in the present moment. The more easy it is to just stay as it is. It becomes a habit which you build up. So this is something you can't make it happen. You just keep on making peace, being kind, being gentle, and then you find out these things happen. And don't think that I have to do this on this retreat. You know, that if you get enlightened on this retreat, that'd be terrible. You won't be able to go to work. You won't be able to sort of pay off all your debts. You know, your husband or your wife will be really upset at me. You know, I didn't send my husband up here to get enlightened, and I wanted to become a monk. I just wanted to be a nicer husband to me. So just take it easy, okay? Take it very gentle. Don't sort of strive too hard. You know, it happens gradually. My first meditation teacher, he told a story which, you know, I've only got a few stories, so they have to be recycled because this is the modern age. Recycling. And that was where he planted, he was about 5 or 6 years old, and he planted, his father gave him some seeds to plant in the garden. He put them in the garden. And he was only 5 or 6 years of age. He was so impatient. So, you know, after every morning, every afternoon, at lunchtime, he checked to see what was going on. Nothing was happening. And so after 2 days, he complained to his father, they're dead, nothing's happening. And his father said, look, it takes a while. You know, the seed has to split. The little shoot is pushing up. It's probably pushing up right now. Leave it alone. In a few days' time, you see a little green shoot come above the soil. And so he waited a few more days. His father was right. You can see a little green shoot coming exactly where he planted these seeds. He was so excited. So he started, he used to water them once a day. Now he watered them twice a day. And he wanted them to grow much quicker. And you know, after 3 or 4 days, they were a couple of inches high. But you know, he wanted them to grow much quicker than that. So he stretched them all to make them grow bigger. Killed every one of them. And that was this little simile of a 5 or 6 year old. You can't stretch a plant. Now you can't make a bush or a tree or a flower grow quicker. Now the flowers, they don't bloom, you know, when you want them to. They just bloom when all the conditions are right. You just got to wait. And that's a very lovely thing about nature. You can't rush it. When it happens, it happens. And that's the nature of your body and your mind. You can't rush these things. You just wait, put all the conditions in place. Just make peace, be kind, be gentle, do meditation, be kind to yourself, rest enough, eat well, and then you find the delightful breath gets more and more and more. It gets easier and easier and easier. So you see there is progress. Wanting to get nimitta has made the meditation worse. This happens. This is something I'm always very aware of. When I talk about nimittas and jhanas and bliss upon bliss, of course it does build up a lot of craving in people. But if I don't mention it, then when these things start to happen, you don't know what to do and you get into trouble. And you know, this is part of the Buddha's teaching, so it's good to, you know, teach as the Buddha taught. So it does make the meditation worse if now you don't realize what are the causes of the nimittas, what's the causes of the jhanas. And that's just being peace. I coined the word, all these jhanas, they're stages of letting go, not stages of attainment. And you gain these things not through your effort, but from your stillness. You get more and more still, less and less things move, and it gets really still and incredibly still and hugely still. And that's what happens. When you're that still, nimittas and jhanas, they just happen. But when you're moving, they can't happen, which is one of the reasons why, if you want them, you'll never get them. Now, I like telling the monks I got my first really deep meditation when I was a lay person at a retreat. Because I could do that when I was a lay person. I had a girlfriend, and I don't mind saying this, sometimes people say to Mum, you shouldn't talk like this, but I was having sex with my girlfriend, and it was only about a week afterwards I was at a retreat, and just getting, you know, the happiness better than sex. And, you know, that just was amazing. How you can do that? Because I could do that, then, but why can't you do that as well? That's why I taught lay people, because, well, I was a lay person. But after I had that experience, it took such a long time to get it back again. And this was personal experience. I didn't really have a teacher to tell me when I was a lay person what to do. And so you worked it out by yourself, you know, what happened. And I teach this to so many people. When you first have a very deep meditation, but your problem is, my problem was, I wanted it back again. And I thought I didn't want it back again, I was just being peaceful. But subconsciously, I just wanted that. And when I got close, yes, it's happening. And that excitement, that wanting, stopped it occurring. So I had to really be very aware that I wasn't aiming for these jhanas anymore. I was aiming for peace, for stillness, for letting go, for emptiness, for things fading away. I stopped the goal from a jhana to just being peaceful, being content, being happy. That was my goal then, in meditation. And because I got the right goal, I was now on the right path. Not the path of wanting these beautiful experiences to return, but just wanting to be peaceful. That was all. And after a while you get the message here, Buddhism, being peaceful, being content, peace of mind, which people often, they aspire for. How on earth can you find peace of mind? Once you know the trick, it's just so easy. Don't want anything. Then you have all the peace you ever want. So you develop this beautiful peace of mind right now. And you make it very deep. Now sometimes I was mentioning like bliss, you get some really incredible blisses. You never think you could be so happy. But also peace. People imagine they understand what that word means. But you know what happens in meditation? You get as peaceful as you've ever been before. And you think nothing can be more peaceful than this. And then you go deeper and more peaceful. And after a while you think, did I really ever understand what peace was? This is more peaceful than the most infinite peace I've ever experienced. And then you go deeper and it's even more peaceful. And you wonder, where does this peace stop? And this becomes great insights, great understandings, and really an interesting journey. And this is what I aim for, if anything, peace, because I know if it's peace, I can't do anything. Or if it's stillness, any action, any doing, any fear, excitement, that destroys stillness. Which is also, I haven't said it yet on this retreat, not really anyway, when anyone says about meditation, when they mention the word concentration, I was, please don't use that word. It is stillness. Stillness. That's samadhi. Stillness. Because when it's stillness, and that's your goal to be still, it makes it really clear. I can't be still if I'm sitting there trying. If I want something. If I'm angry at something. If I'm upset at something, I'm not still anymore. To be still, you have to let things go. Let them be. And I never mentioned Ajahn Chah Simli yet. I always do it on most of these retreats. He used to hold his hand up and wave his hand. And said, this is a leaf on a tree. It only moves because there's a wind blowing it. If that wind stops, the leaf doesn't stop immediately. It moves less and less and less until it eventually comes to perfect stillness because of friction with the air. It's perfectly still because you know that that's its natural state, to be still. It's only the wind makes it move. And Ajahn Chah would carry on by saying, that's the same as the human mind. The nature of your human mind is actually to be still. That's its default position. And it only moves because of wanting. The winds of desire. I want, I don't want. That makes your mind move. So how can you get your leaf, your mind, to be still? You can't hold it still. You have to somehow protect it from the wind. Protect it from wanting, desire, anything. And if you want nimittas, you're making your mind agitated. If you want jhanas, you're just shaking it. So once you understand that, if it's very clear how to meditate, and why it is that, you know, that wanting a nimitta does make the meditation worse. Wanting anything, good stuff, bad stuff, it's all wanting. And what happens is it just makes the mind move. You go away from stillness. This afternoon I can't even get piti sukha in the beautiful breath. I tell myself this is good enough, but I feel often a little frustrated. You're just trying to convince yourself, you know. So after a while, know what the problem is. Not just not attaining things, not getting what you want. The problem is there's wanting something in the first place. Once you realize that, you realize a great insight. And tomorrow I'll be talking about insights. And this is one of the first insights, the insight into the path. Now, what creates stillness? What am I supposed to be doing in this Buddhism? And when you are meditating, it's letting go of wanting. You can't change the world. You have your ups and downs, you have your sickness and your health, the times when you're really happy and what times when you're not so happy. But you can certainly change your reaction to it, how you deal with it. Sometimes it's rainy, sometimes it's sunny, sometimes it's cold, sometimes it's warm. You can't really change that, but you can change what you have full power over is your reaction to it, how you deal with it. You can want it to be different. If you can change it, fine, but a lot of times you can't change it, so let it be. And that let it be is powerful. You know the story I've said about my toothache in Thailand. Terrible toothache, not able to sleep at night, really driving you crazy, incredible pain. And people have told me, say it's only a toothache, but some people have gone crazy with toothaches, apparently. And I thought I was going crazy and didn't know what to do. No telephones anywhere, no mobile phones, no landlines anywhere. No electricity, no medicine in the cabinet, up in the jungle, long way from anywhere. That was brilliant. Thank you so much. Because if there was an escape, I'd have used an escape. But I had no escape, so all I could do was let it go. And I had no choice. I had this incredible experience. I've heard let go, let things be. You've heard that so many times. When your back is against the wall, you've got no other thing to do, then actually you do it. If there was an aspirin or a Panadol, I wouldn't have done this. Because there was nothing and I couldn't stand the pain any longer, I just let it be. And there was, to this day I can remember that experience. It was over about 40 years ago, my first year. And it was incredible. Unbearable pain, 1 second. And 1 second later, no pain, but just bliss. Total change within a second. And I couldn't believe it. I thought, wow, this letting go stuff is very powerful. You just, no pain left at all. You just total happiness, contentment, bliss. And even if it was late at night, I don't know, maybe 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, you know, and I've got to get up at 3. You know, I just didn't want to sleep. I just sat and meditated for half an hour and then laid down for sort of sleep. Because, you know, you had so much energy and so much inspiration too. And it was just let go and do it properly. Because you've got no choice, you have to. So if any of you ever get in that situation, unbearable pain, you just can't stand it a moment longer, remember, let it be. Just remembering that, you'll be amazed you do it, because you've got no choice. and you're free. Dear Ajahn Brahm, what if someone has a faulty switch and does not know when to switch off their thinking button? No one is faulty. Everyone is the same. They are adamant and too conceited to want to meditate or relax. How else can I help? Okay, we always think that there's something wrong with me. That everyone else can meditate, but not me. Everyone else can get jhana, but you know, if you knew what I had went through when I was a kid and what I had to do, oh, it's just no hope for me. I'm a hopeless case. You know, when brains were given out, I was at the end of the queue. Or whatever it is. So, I always like telling stories of people I know who were, for some people thought they were hopeless cases. And one of the great stories which I heard, and you know, it's true, of the young man who can never pass grade one. And I don't know how you can fail grade one at school. Even in Singapore, you know, which has got high standards. But this was in Thailand after 1 year doing grade one primary school. You know, maybe he couldn't do colouring or I didn't know what the crayon, I don't know. But anyway, the teacher had to hold him back. All his friends went to grade two. He had to repeat grade one. I can see people repeating a year at university or even grade 12, but repeating grade one, I've never heard that before in my life. So all his friends went on and he had to repeat grade one, second year. After the second year, she failed him again. You know, just with the best will in the world, you know, she couldn't sort of advance him. So he did grade one for 3 years in a row. At the end of which, the teachers gave up on him. Couldn't even pass grade one. So they threw him out of the school system. Can't teach this guy. So what do they do in Thailand when you're that stupid, that dumb, you can't even pass grade one? That's right, they ordain him as a monk. But not all monks started out like that. But they ordained him a monk. He was a young little novice in the village monastery. And, you know, for all the, you know, these forest monks, I'm a forest monk. Sometimes I get very upset at forest monks, always putting down the village monks. Yeah, you don't practice, you carry money, you don't do this. But there are some really, really kind monks in the villages. You know, they may not meditate, maybe their precepts might not be perfect, but they're just incredibly compassionate. And there was one of these old abbots, been a monk for many years, and you know, he took this young boy under his wing and really gave him incredible time, teaching him like Namo Tassa. Namo Tassa. Yeah, what's that second word? Tassa. Oh yeah, Tassa. What was the first word? And he was one of those people. And just after a couple of years of that, even this really compassionate, patient, tolerant old monk, he'd had enough too. So what do you do with village monks who can't even be a village monk? Forest monks. Because you don't have to do much chanting as a forest monk, you just meditate. So they sent him to a forest monk, and he just told him how to meditate, just watch your breath go in and go out. And this fellow, this young man, was such an empty, peaceful mind. He just meditated so deeply from the very first. Jhanas, nimittas, a whole lot. And he soon became a great arahat, fully enlightened, a great teacher. Because his meditation just totally took off. He had just this beautiful, simple mind. Couldn't do arithmetic. And he said even chanting, he could never learn the chants. But what he did, and I remember saying, I can't remember his name now, but I remember him saying what he did to do the chanting, because monks have to do some chanting, they have to remember some. Because he had such a powerful mind, he could actually access his previous life when he was a monk with a much better brain. And when he had to, no, true, when he did the chanting, he accessed his previous life, you know, to be able to remember the chanting so he could chant in this life. Because in this life he couldn't learn anything. So, you know, he went to his previous life, remembered the chanting, and that's, you know, how he chanted. Really weird, but, you know, that's how he did it. And I liked that story because there was a hopeless case. No, an idiot, basically. But he became a great meditation teacher, a great monk, fully enlightened. So there's hope for each one of you. So sometimes you just don't know sort of what you've got inside of you. So if you've got a 40 switch and don't know how to switch off the thinking button, sometimes people think. You know, and they can't stop, but sometimes they just get it. They just know the button. They find that button, they press it, and once they find it, they can find it again. When they want to think, they can. When they don't need to, they don't. They're peaceful. And the button's in there somewhere. So just keep pressing this and pressing that. That's what I do when the computer doesn't work. Press all the different buttons, see what happens. Soon you find one which works. And I must admit, I went to this IT expert once and he said, don't tell anyone, but that's what IT experts do as well. They keep pressing this icon and that icon until they find out what's wrong and then it happens. They usually bust so many stuff at first, but who cares? Anyway, they're adamant and too conceited to want to meditate or relax. It's not adamant or conceited. You've got no choice. You have to relax because the alternative is just too painful. And that's why sometimes, you know, people just, I'm not going to relax, or then I'm not going to meditate, I'm fed up with meditation. So, okay, fair enough, but the idea of relaxation, happiness, it just draws you. It's like the ball will always roll downhill. Human mind would always roll towards happiness and peace and relaxation. You may go a circuitous route, but eventually you'll go to peace. Because that's what you want in life. Even working, people go to work so they can make enough money to relax. You know, remember that story I told you, open the door of your heart, the Mexican fisherman? I'll tell it again because I love telling my stories again. Because there was an American, he was a professor, he went on vacation to the Caribbean, to the east coast of Mexico. And he was on one of these really picturesque little fishing villages on the beautiful Caribbean coast. And he was just, you know, just waiting there just in the morning, and he saw this boat pull in. It'd obviously been out very early. It was a fishing boat, just one captain on the boat. And he watched this man unload his catch. And because he was on vacation, he had a little conversation with this old fisherman. And said, what are you doing now? He said, well, senor, I've caught enough fish for the day. I'm now going to go home and have lunch with my wife. And after lunch, I have a siesta. I have a sleep. And then after the sleep, you know, when my kids come home from school, I can play with my kids, help them with some of their English or math or whatever. And in the evening, I go to the canteen, or I like playing guitar with my friends. They're having a few drinks, not much. Life is good. And then this professor said, look, that is a waste of a resource. Look at this fishing boat, idle in the afternoon. And he said, I'm a professor of business studies. He said, why don't you have your lunch, but don't be lazy and have siestas. After lunch, get out in your boat and go out in the afternoon. You know, because you're using your resource, you know, double, you'll get twice as many fish. So when you make that twice, you know, your fish, you have twice an income. With the money you save from that, you know, you'll soon be able to buy a bigger boat and have a crew. When you buy a big boat with a crew, it has more equipment, it can catch about five times as much fish as this small little old rust heap of a boat. And then you'll be able to make so much money that soon you'll be able to buy a second boat. You know, and soon you'll have a fleet of boats fishing. And once you've got your fleet of boats, you know, you make it into a business, and then you can actually do an IPO, I think it's called, initial public offering of your company. And being the major stockholder, you know, you can make fortune that way. You can make a few million dollars. You know, that's how it's done these days. Or something like that. I don't know, but it's something like that. And this Mexican fisherman was listening attentively all the time. And when the professor finished, that's when the fisherman said, well, once I'm a millionaire, then what will I do? Because a lot of times in our dreams and fantasies, if you're a dream, you're not married yet, you dream, I'll find this beautiful girl or this beautiful guy, the one who's meant for me, and then we'll get married. Then what? Well, we'll have kids, but then what? We don't take it to the limit, to the end. And so he was asking, you know, just, you win the lottery, then what? And so that's what the fisherman asked, then what? And the business professor hadn't worked out the business plan that far. So he made it up on the spot. Well, once you're a millionaire, you know, you can retire. That's what people do. You can retire to a nice, beautiful fishing village like this. You can buy yourself a small boat just to go out for fun in the morning. Because you're already wealthy, you know, you can have lunch with your wife every day. You can always have a rest after lunch. And you'll be able to always be there because, you know, you're wealthy, you don't have to work so hard. Always be there for your kids when you come home in the evening. With your stress-free life, you'll be able to go to the cantina in the evening, play guitar, you won't have to be on the computer working out the next contract for the following day. And that's when the fisherman said, Signor, I do that already. Why do I want to be a millionaire? And it's a wonderful story because most people want to be rich so they can live like poor people. And when I saw that, I thought, wow, that's really sort of cool. So sometimes, you know, what do you want it for? Can't you be happy now? Anyway. If nimitta can change light from black to bright light, any meaning, will nimitta get brighter when you are getting deep into meditation? Yeah, nimitta has changed because you are changing. I never mentioned this morning, the colour of those lights is totally unimportant. Sometimes it's your favourite colour, sometimes you always see purple nimittas or green nimittas or white nimittas, gold nimittas, whatever. So the colour's not important. What's important is their brightness and their beauty. So it doesn't matter what colour it is. But it usually should be a single colour, not sort of like polka dot or stripe or whatever, because that's just too complicated. And it does get brighter the deeper you get. From the suttas, it seemed that many became stream winners just by listening to a discourse. No need for meditation, jhanas, etc. Even bandits. Why does it seem so tough now? It's really unfair, isn't it? How do we know if we are stream winners? Now, if you actually, you know, you have sutta classes in Singapore, you've read suttas. And sometimes you see these suttas and they say, after this, 100 monks became enlightened fully. And you read it and what did I miss? And the reason is because when in the suttas, they only give like a snapshot of, you know, the journey of those people who became stream winners or enlightened. It's only that last little thing. And all of these people, they had to keep some precepts and they had to sort of meditate. There's only one way to become a stream winner, to become enlightened, and that's the Eightfold Path, which includes, you know, your morality, right speech, right action, right livelihood. Now you have to have those things. It has to be mindfulness. It has to be stillness. All of those factors are important. My favorite part of the Eightfold Path is number two, Sammasankappa. It's right intention. And, you know, that's why, you know, you look at that, what does it say? The three right intentions. Nekamma, letting go. Avayapada, which is kindness, and ahimsaka, gentleness. No thoughts, intentions of letting go, kindness and gentleness. That's so important. It's the second factor of the Eightfold Path. If without that, without any factor of the Eightfold Path, you can't get very far. So that's one of those. People focus on like mindfulness, on meditation, stillness. Yeah, you focus on your precepts. But that's one of those ones which is missed out. And it's essential. Instead of saying letting go, sometimes I like say make peace instead. Same thing, just different angle. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. That's a fundamental part of the Eightfold Path, number two. So, when a person, when they say a stream winner, that sort of, you know, somehow bothered me when I didn't really understand Pali too well. Because there was one case where people tried to kill the Buddha, you know, Devadatta and King Ajatasattu. And what they did, one plan they had, they hired an assassin to kill the Buddha. And then two assassins to kill that assassin. And four assassins to kill the two who killed the one who killed the Buddha. And eight to kill the four who killed the two who killed the one to kill the Buddha. And I think eventually, I think they stopped at 16. 16 to kill the eight who killed the four who killed the two who killed the one who killed the Buddha. And that way they thought, you know, the trail will be so complicated they never find out who actually killed the Buddha. And what happened was the guy who was about to kill the Buddha went to see the Buddha, but the Buddha was just so soft and kind. And just, even though he was got a sword there, was going to be paid, and he thought, oh no, I can't kill a person like this. He's just too kind, too soft. And you can't kill someone that cute. So he just said, I'm really sorry, I came here to kill you, I just can't do it. And the Buddha taught him some teachings, and he became a stream winner. And then the two other, they were looking for this guy, and the Buddha knew where these other two were. He said, don't go that way, they're waiting for you. Go another way, you can escape. And then the two, have you seen this guy who's come to kill you? I haven't seen him. And the Buddha gave them teachings, and they admitted they had come to kill somebody, and they became stream winners. And then the four were looking for the two. They found the Buddha, and the Buddha made them stream winners as well. And the eight, the 16 also came to see the Buddha. And so these were 31 people. Now, I do my maths, I know. Teaching plus eight, plus four, plus two, plus one is 31. All of these people, they came as murderers, and they all became stream winners. And I thought, that is really unlikely. And that is a bit too much to take. But then, you know, I realized that the way they use the word stream winner, you know, in Pali, it means that they've entered the path to be stream winners. They haven't attained stream winners yet, but they've been so inspired, so moved, they are now going to practice that Eightfold Path. And because they're on the path of being a stream winner, they have to attain the fruit of stream winning in this very lifetime. And it can't be any otherwise. They have to attain it. And that's actually common in the suttas. And where I found out the way they use, you know, this word, being a stream winner, it does have a parallel in the use of the word being dead in English. If you are dead, most of the time it means, you know, you're not breathing, you're about to be cremated, or you've already been cremated. That's being dead. But we also use the word dead. If you have, say, offended one of the triad gangs in Singapore, if you've really cheated a mafia don, then people come and say, you're dead. But I'm still alive, I'm still breathing. What they mean by that word in English is, your death is certain. You're just as if you're dead now, because after you they're going to catch you, you're going to be killed. You're dead, my friend. And that idiom, which we know in English, is precisely how it's used in Pali. Now that's the way this language works. When they say you're a stream winner, it might say, you're dead, Claire, because what you did to me. You haven't done anything. It's just you're in front, you're the nearest person. So I keep picking on you, I'm sorry. But what it means is that your stream winning is certain. So just like they say, you know, you're dead. You know, if you upset a gangster. The same means that, you know, you're going to be a stream winner, you have to be. So when you understand that, it makes more sense. Those robbers, it's not they hadn't been keeping precepts, they've been bad people, professional assassins, with such bad thoughts in their mind. No way you can, you know, become a stream winner straight away. Even the Buddha can't do that to these people. But certainly they can be inspired and have such faith. From now on, they're going to keep that Eightfold Path. And they've seen a Buddha, been taught by a Buddha, so inspired. They have to become a stream winner at the end, in this life. No alternative. That's why they call them stream winners. So when you understand that, it makes so much sense and answers a question that how can these people become stream winners when they're murderers? And you are really good people, you've been keeping precepts, serving at the Buddhist Fellowship for all these years, and you've got nothing? That's really unfair. But another thing I'll tell you, that when you listen to these teachings, you can't forget them. These are powerful teachings. And for many of you, it's already too late. You can't get out of this now. It's going to happen. There's something when you touch, you know, even a glimpse of a jhana, a glimpse of understanding oneself, you know, it's scary sometimes. Really scary, but you can't ignore it. You have to come back again. You know, you're being pulled towards this. Totally involuntary. Sorry, but it's too late for most of you. You're going to be stream winners whether you like it or not. So actually, that's what happens. Dear Ajahn, is it true there are 17 realms and humans are the fifth realm from the bottom? Oh, it's just like terrible. If you're fifth from the bottom at school, you know, your parents would be very upset at you. There are seven, it's actually, in the old days they said 37 realms of existence. And even though those are just, you know, many of them are heavenly realms, jhana realms, they say this realm is one of the best. And one of the reasons it's one of the best is because they have some suffering, they have some happiness. If it's all happiness, you don't learn. All suffering is just too painful. But this is where I got my 70% rule from. You know my 70% rule? It's in good, bad, who knows. When I was a school teacher setting my first maths exam, I didn't know what to do. I sought advice. A senior maths teacher said, don't set it too easy. If all your students get 100%, 95%, it's a waste of time. But don't set it too hard. Because if you know your students get 40%, 30%, the highest is 45%, they will lose their motivation. They will come away thinking maths is too hard, I can't do maths. So they lose their motivation. But if you make it 70%, the average score, aim for 70%, he said. And if you get 70% at something, that's a pretty good score. You're motivated, yeah, I can do maths. I like maths because I can do it, I get 70%. But the 30% where your students fail, said this teacher, that's where you as the teacher get feedback. That's where you can find out what your students did not understand. So the next lessons you can deal with, you know, what they're weak on. The 30% where you fail is where you learn. That's why in life, if you're always succeeding, always winning, always the top of the class, always the football team is winning, always the best lover, having a wonderful marriage, always rising to the top of the company, stuff like that. A waste of time in your life. Yeah, you have fun, but what do you learn? But if you're always in trouble, you can never pass exams, and you know, you're always failing, you can never find a partner in life, you always mess it up, and you know, you can't find a job, and you're always sick, and everything is just going wrong, then of course you do get depressed. But 70% is perfect. Because with 70%, yeah, you know, you're having difficulties in your business, you're having difficulties in your life, in your marriage even, but it's pretty good. The 30% we have the difficulties, that is where you grow and learn. Without those problems, you wouldn't learn anything in life. And that's why this human life is pretty good, the best realm. Over in the heaven realms, it's just 100% all the time. Whatever you want, you get. In the hell realms, animal realms, it's just too tough. You don't even get 50%, maybe 20, 30%. And that's why this may be, you know, not the best realm, it's not the worst realm. It's what we call the Goldilocks realm. Just right. You know the three bears? We've got another bear now. So that's Daddy Bear. Mummy Bear is over there somewhere. And this is Baby Bear. Remember Goldilocks? You know, went to the bear's cave or something and said, they all had porridge. That's why we give you porridge here. What was it? The first bowl, this porridge is too hot. So this porridge is too cold. But little baby bear's porridge was just right. And that's what Goldilocks ate. So we have the three bears now. So that's the human realm. Better hurry up because I'm going too slow. In most Dharma centers, before Dharma talk, there's always a guided meditation. However, it's always began with relaxing every part of the body, followed by counting the breath with focus instruction, was if our mind drifts away to restart chanting. I think it's another letter, some, page 1 of 2. Crikey, where's page 2 gone? That's not page 2 of 2. That's not page 2 of 2. Okay, never mind. Page 1 of 1 is enough. That's okay. Page 1 of 1 is enough. Oh, it's over here. 1 through 10 again. Keep repeating. In your earlier talk, you mentioned not to concentrate, but just let it be. Is the counting not conducive then? I already mentioned the counting. You know, it's the same as like doing mantras with the first part of the meditation. Breathing in, peace. Breathing out, let go. Or whatever. No, that's, instead of doing that, you can do the counting. Breathing in 1, breathing out 1, breathing in 2, breathing out 2. Breathing in 3, breathing out 3. But there are many people in Singapore, they get their calculator to do that for them. Or even worse, sometimes to help them count, they have these beads. And they make so much noise. Sometimes I meditate, they click, 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 click. Oh, come on. Why can't beads be silent beads? Why do I always have to be click, 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 click? So we don't do that because, you know, that especially the beads, you can just count yourself, one beating a 1 out, 1, 2, 2. That, what that does, it just gives you something to help you watch the breath at the beginning. But it can be just too much hard work. So don't do too much of that. However, what is mentioned here is guided meditation. Now, I can't give guided meditation on these retreats because, you know, sometimes people are sitting, sometimes they're walking. And people have asked that in the past. It just, you can't really fit it in, because if you're guided meditation, it's for everybody. And it's all or nothing. And I like it to be more free and easy so you can meditate for a long time, a short time, walk, rest, whatever. But if you do want to do guided meditation, what to do is download it on your smartphone and put, you know, the earbud in your ear and listen to it yourself. And now you can do that any time you want to do it. And it doesn't disturb anybody. So, you know, if any of you have guided meditation on your iPhones or iPods, whatever you have, you know, with the ear plugs, you're most welcome to bring that in here, because, you know, it doesn't make any noise. Put it in your ear and have a guided meditation to help you in the morning or afternoon or whatever, on retreats. And that's really helpful sometimes at home. Because, you know, sometimes you are tired, and sometimes you do wander. And having, you know, somebody talk you through meditation can be very, very helpful. So there's so many guided meditations, you know, on our website and other people's website as well. Our ones are very good because they're cost effective. We always do things for free over there. And I really sort of sometimes you get these really low quality sort of instructions which you have to pay a fortune for. You know, some years ago, you know, I was invited to this big human resources conference in London. You know, that actually there was a big world HR conference in Singapore. And I, you know, brought over there by Soon Han, and I was talent spotted there, and they invited me to London, all expenses paid, you know, free air ticket, good airline, I think it was Singapore Airlines, only the best. They paid for the airline, hotel, everything, so I could give a talk. So I gave a talk there, but, you know, I've got family in England, and I was about to give my talk in this big convention centre, the best, you know, it was in Docklands, Excel Centre, this very, very plush convention centre. And then the person who's supposed to be managing me, you know, assigned, you know, just make sure, you know, he's okay, meet him at the door, make sure he's got cups of tea, coffee, take him to the conference room and look after him afterwards. You know, they appoint someone to do that, look after you. And she came up to me and said, there's somebody at the gate trying to get in for free. No, he says he's your brother. And I thought, embarrassing me again. So I said, I better go and check. So we went down to check, and there was my brother and my niece. And they're trying to get in for free. And, you know, I said, yeah, it is my brother, that is my niece. And he said, well, really, you're only allowed one in. And he said, but, you know, you come a long way, okay, you can take both of them in. I sweet-talked her. And so both of them came in. As soon as I was left alone with my brother, what are you embarrassing me for? Why don't you pay? You know, he's a bank manager, he's got enough money. And he said, do you realise how much they were charging for 1 hour talk? £300 each. That's how much they were charging everyone to come in to listen to me. £300 each. Now I know my market value. And you're getting hours and hours. How many talks I give? At least 2 talks a day. That's £600 each. Times 8 or 9. You're getting a bargain here. I don't know how much the BF charged you. It's way below my market rate. Well, I couldn't believe how much they were charging. Lots of people came to listen to me. So anyway, I'm going to get into that. That's actually with... How did I start this? What was I talking about? How you concentrate? I don't know. Sorry? Guided meditation. How come I got that? I don't know. That's right, because our guided meditations, they're that high quality. They really should be $1,000 each to download. But for you, it's for free. That's what I was going on. Free CDs, and you can download them from the internet, download them from CDs. Guided meditations. You get your favorite one. Now, maybe 2 or 3, put it on your sort of smartphone. And if you're sort of on an aircraft somewhere, not when you're flying it, but when you're... Let go! Let go! Then you can listen to that and just makes you peaceful and quiet. It's like you're having Ajahn Brahm with you, or well, your favorite monk or nun, any time. So that's really good. If time is infinity, or they've got sort of the symbol for infinity, can it be that all our past lives are happening concurrently? Dimensions. It's a full moon night tonight. Yes. The full moon is up. There was the eclipse earlier, but we couldn't see it here because it was before the moonrise. And it was a red moon. Voodoo moon. Oh. No, you're perfectly safe again. Yeah. If all the past lives are happening concurrently, if they are concurrently, it doesn't matter, we still can't reach it. So it's as if they don't exist. However, sometimes people do remember their past lives. How can that be? And it's such a far distance. But, you know, and people do this. So they're meditating, and they can contact a life a long way away, hundreds of years ago, and it's real. So yeah, time is past, but sometimes we can. It is reachable. It's touchable, even though it's 100 years ago. Weird, but true. Dear Ajahn, in reference to the 6th precept, refraining from eating at wrong time, how does food interfere us from realizing jhana? Somebody wants a loophole here. Someone to argue. I'm hungry, please. One reason why it does interfere is, you know, it's true, when you eat, all the blood goes to the stomach. So you do get a bit tired after eating. You know, and sometimes, you know, even if you eat 3 meals a day, 4 meals a day, we always know because, you know, I go to conferences, even the BF does a conference every now and again, and they always put me on after lunch. There is the graveyard shift for conferences because they know that I can entertain people, I can keep people awake while everyone else will go to sleep. And they do that. I've been at other people's conferences, and even though they may be good speakers, you put them on after the lunch break and everybody is just heads down after a decent lunch. So everyone is sleepy after lunch. So if you haven't eaten for a while, All the blood is in your brain. Mindfulness is much clearer and more chance to get enlightened. Especially on a full moon. When did the Buddha get enlightened? Full moon. This is your chance tonight. Dear Ajahn, some teachers teach Vipassana insight meditation and call it open awareness. Can you get jhana with open eye meditation? Why is it they say it is not necessary to get jhana to get insights? Thank you. One of the reasons they say it's not necessary to get jhanas to get insight because they haven't got jhanas. I'm saying as it is. Anyone who's had a jhana know how important it is. But if you haven't had a jhana, people say, oh, it's not necessary. You can understand why, because you know, they can't do it, so please, it's not necessary. So that's one of the problems. With open eyes, when you're open eyes, you're seeing things, and it's a disturbance. The whole idea of meditation is settle things down to let all the five senses disappear. So it's much better to actually keep the eyes closed. And I will answer more on this question tomorrow when I talk about insight and how important it is to get jhana to get insight. Bad karma can cause one to be reborn in hell. Is hell used metaphorically? These are, in the suttas, these are called mind-made realms. These aren't, hell is not pre-existing. A place like Singapore or Hong Kong or London. You know, London is there. You know, so if you want to, you can go there if you want to. But hell is not pre-existing. It's a mental world. And you make it. You construct it. As you think you need to be punished. So if you look at the old temple paintings, they've got vats of boiling oil. They've got these demons with sharp forks poking you. And this is 2,500 years old. The art of torture has advanced since those days. So that is just so 2,500 years ago. So hell is not like that these days. And I once said, if my hell, if ever I did something really bad and go to hell, my hell, what I would suffer from the most of all would be what I call the karaoke hell. Where I have to sit and listen to all these drunk people trying to sing, you know, Frank Sinatra, totally out of tune, with a grating voice, thinking they can sing when they blooming well can't. But that happened to me in Penang once. Penang, on a retreat, it was actually Christmas Eve or something, and just where I was staying in Penang, Mahindarama Temple, the house opposite was having a Christmas party. And I'd finished the meditation at 9, 10 o'clock, go back to your room, tired out, want to sleep. And there was a karaoke party at about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I wouldn't have minded if they could sing. But the later it got, you know, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, the later it got, the more out of tune it got. And I remember this one woman, and she was screaming, and everyone was clapping and shouting, and it was the most terrible noise I'd ever heard in my life. And so I realized that, you know, if you really want to torture someone, send them to karaoke hell, where you have to be there and listen to karaoke 7 days a week. Oh, I couldn't stand that. So, but you make a hell which you think you deserve. And you can leave whenever you want to. That's the incredible thing about knowing these are mind-made realms. Why do people torture themselves? We're into this terrible thing called guilt. I've done something wrong, therefore I think I need to be punished. And you punish yourself. No one sends you to hell. Only you send yourself to hell if you think you deserve it. And you stay there as long as you think you need to. Literally, the gates of hell are open. You can walk out whenever you want. But it's amazing, people just don't want to walk out. They think they need more pain, to pay for something. It's this terrible, terrible idea that people do something wrong and they think they need to be punished to learn. That is nothing to do with Buddhism. If you have made a mistake, any mistake, even bad mistakes, if you get punished, you fear punishment so much you will never acknowledge the truth. You won't tell anybody. You won't even tell yourself you've done something wrong because you're afraid of the punishment. All punishment ends up driving the truth underground. Why would politicians say they, you know, took money corruptly? Would they be honest? They'd go to jail for that. But imagine if there was an amnesty. So if you acknowledge what you did, then we'll forgive you. Then that would allow the truth to come up. That was the great insight of Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa. Knowing that if there was any punishment, they would never find out what really happened in the apartheid years of South Africa. When it was total amnesty, as long as you told the truth, amnesty, then the truth could come out. All punishment hides the truth. That's why, you know, even personal fear of punishment, you won't admit what you really did. You can't, psychologically. So what happens is in Buddhism there's no punishment. You acknowledge the truth, you find out what you did wrong. And you learn from it. If you don't know what you did wrong, how can you learn? You learn from it, and once you learn from it, you pretend not to do the same thing again. The whole purpose is to learn, to grow, become better human beings. And that's what the Buddha said. You acknowledge the faults, you forgive them, you learn from them. That is growth, the Buddha said in Buddhism. That's how you advance, not through punishments. And if you understand that, you're a stream winner, which is why stream winners never go to the lower realms. It's not that they haven't done anything bad, it's that they can forgive themselves, they can learn, they don't need to be punished anymore. A wise person understands that punishment just drives the truth underground, it makes matters worse. So you don't punish people, you don't punish yourself. Put your hand up, what you did wrong, tell everybody, learn from it, you tend not to do it again. So that's where we get insight from. I don't know where I got that one from. Anyway, let's go for this one. Please convey compliments and gratitude to the cook. Oh, you got a compliment here. Michelle, for putting in so much effort and patience in taking care of us. We truly appreciate her cooking. Isn't that nice? Actually, I think, is this your writing, Michelle? No, it's somebody else's writing. I'll give that to you afterwards. You can keep it. Hi, Ajahn. Why, after the experience of jhana, people won't return to this world anymore? Why do you want to come back again? If you get out of prison, how many people volunteer? I want to go to prison again, please. And once you're out, you don't want to go back. If I use energy to focus on lower abdomen, I get lights and lose sense of my body, but it uses a lot of energy. If I just relax and let go, I don't have special experience and usually just end up in boredom. Maybe I should practice method one. See if you can find a middle way between those two. Because, you know, it does use a lot of energy. Basically, you're borrowing the lights. You're not being patient enough to let them actually come slowly. So, just to make it a little bit interesting, maybe once a day you can just put the energy into it, just so it gives you something to lean on for the time being. But the main practice should be the letting go and relaxing, because then the lights will be sustainable. Ajahn, could it be that we are the product of stardust? Some of you are. Some of you, I better not go there. We are the product of stardust, radiation, water and heat when conditions are right, that we are equipped to survive, including the control mechanism that we called mind, and that the mind can be recycled. The defilements of greed, hate and delusion are actually essential for the survival. The Buddha found the way to unlock the code, and by default the person who sees the truth will self-destruct. So be careful for those who are not yet tired of living. That's interesting. You can't self-destruct because there's no self inside to destruct in the first place. That's a nice thing. It's not annihilation because there's nothing to destroy. You look inside, there's nothing there. I can't get rid of anything because there's nothing to get rid of. So in the end, it's just that realization means, poof, you're gone. The delusion which keeps you going in this world has vanished. So, your body is stardust, and radiation, wind, well, it depends whether you've been eating baked beans, whether you've got wind elements, water and heat, those are the four elements. And the control mechanism we call mind, it's not really a control mechanism, because if it really was, the mind would do a much better job. Sometimes we think the meditation is teaching our mind to be smart, to be wise. So it can control things much better. Sometimes people do that for religions like Buddhism, for yoga, self-improvement courses. Think if you can only become wise, then you won't have any more suffering. But when you really do become wise, you realize that's not the way to end suffering. That's like being in a prison and just decorating each other's cells and making the cells a bit more comfortable. But really, the idea is to realize you're in prison and escape. In fact, you don't even need to escape. You know, the prison doors are open. You just walk out. But some people have been in prison such a long time, they don't want to walk out. They're afraid to walk out. It's scary to go to jhana and walk out of your body and where you've experienced so much of your life. But when you do, you're free. But I'll say more about that in insight tomorrow. Dear Ajahn, with all due respect, I wish to suggest that the parent who feared the son being a gay may get HIV to... That the parent who feared the son being a gay may get HIV to please get more reading knowledge from trustworthy sources about the disease on this retreat. I know that Dr. Lee is the head of CDC at Tan Kok Seng Hospital and has been instrumental in raising awareness on how HIV is spread. Also recently, our TV program features Sister Beta and a group of volunteers who have been supporting the HIV community for the past 10 years. I remember Beta got me to go and hug a HIV patient the day before he died. You got a picture of that? I was hugging him. I never got HIV. How many years ago was that? No, it was before then. Quite a few years ago. Anyway, I survived. I understand HIV does affect heterosexuals and children too. So be better educated could help the parent remove fear and to love her child unconditionally. Indeed. So, you know, HIV, you know, you don't sort of get that very easily. It has to be transmission of fluids. And, you know, that's very hard to do. So you're perfectly safe. You won't get HIV, they won't get HIV. I never did. I didn't even know the guy. Just know he was about to die, so give him a big blessing before he died. When I was younger, I had two abortions. The first one was not ready, and the second, the fetus was deformed. At that point, something of suffering for me to the and the babies. I was not a Buddhist and do not know the seriousness of the decisions. Now I'm a Buddhist. I repented and keep my five precepts, but I wonder how much more will I have to pay or punish for those wrongdoings? Absolutely nothing. You don't have to be punished at all. When women have abortions, they look to men to decide whether it's good or bad. Who tells you it's bad? Men do. And men have never been pregnant. What the hell do they know? Wouldn't it be better if women decided whether abortions were good or bad? not men. At least you know what you're talking about. But all the religious leaders in the world, they're men. And they say abortion is bad because they're men. And even the judges who decide on legalities of abortion are men. And all the politicians who change the law, refuse to change the law, are mostly men. How many female politicians do you have in Singapore? What's the proportion in Parliament? Anyone know? The majority are men, aren't they? And they make the law, which you women have to follow. Is there something wrong there somewhere? And I've seen that before, because, you know, that as a monk, I can listen and feel. And I feel it's totally unfair the way you are treated with abortion. Now, no women I know, and I've spoken to a lot who have had abortions, have ever made that choice lightly. They think about it, they worry about it, you know, beforehand, and it gets to the point where they don't really have a choice. They don't do it with wrong intention. And karma is intention. They're trying to do the best for themselves, for the family, for others, whatever. Their intention is usually compassionate and kind. Because they don't take this thing lightly. They don't do that. It's only abortion. Just go and do it like, you know, buying something in the supermarket. It's something you really consider very deeply. And so when you make a decision, it's hardly ever bad karma. Because you're trying to do the very best in difficult situations. So, that's the best I can do. And I sympathize for you. I support you to the max. It's a few causes I keep getting involved in, and that's one of them. Because I think you've been totally mistreated, you know, when you've had abortions. And you feel bad afterwards because society makes you feel bad. All these people say, bad girl, you're a murderer, you're a killer. And you're not a murderer or a killer. A murderer or a killer, they go out in the middle of the night and they shoot people and rob them. Now that's bad karma. But you know, you're in a difficult situation. What the heck are you going to do? So what happens if you have had an abortion? Not punishment and feeling bad and guilty about yourself. Acknowledge it. Put your hand up. Yes, I've had an abortion. Don't be afraid of telling people. And number two, when it brings it up, you've acknowledged it, you've forgiven it, you learn from it. Now, don't get in that situation again, if at all possible. You know, have contraception. You know, don't go sleeping around. Just have a single partner. That's enough suffering, having many. And also, just again, the guy, you know, gets the sex and you get the baby. There's something wrong there. Make sure that he wears contraception as well. And sometimes stand up, even if there's no contraception around, say no. No, I can't do it today. Whatever, because you women need to stand up for yourselves and protect yourselves. So that's what you learn from this. And don't get into that situation again. And when you acknowledge, when you forgive, no guilt, you learn from it, then there's far less unwanted pregnancies. Which means the problem gets so much lesser. Because there is many abortions in the world. And some say, why do they happen? Now, there's contraception available. It's not expensive. And why do people get pregnant? There's a lot of time it's because of the guilt and fear. We don't really know what's going on. We don't talk about these things. And sometimes women, again, get exploited. And don't feel like standing up for themselves and saying no. And they end up carrying a baby which they can't look after. So if you have had an abortion, or your kids get an abortion, support them to the max. It's such a difficult time. And don't think they're unclean and terrible. They're always welcome in any society I support. They can always be my friend. I'll always be your teacher if you want me, if you've had an abortion. But learn from it. And don't put yourself in that situation again. That is growth. And then there won't be so many unwanted pregnancies in Singapore and so many abortions. once it comes to the surface. The moment it's stigmatized. And because it's stigmatized, underground, you can't deal with the problem. And there'll be more abortions. And more women. Now, many of you, some of you I know, have had abortions. And it's painful. I mean, spiritually. And it's just really difficult for you. And, you know, it's one of those things. Always say anything like that. You know, not blaming yourself, but it is a lump of shit. Dig it in the garden, make a beautiful garden out of it. All the pain of life, the shit of life is fertilized if you know how to use it. And just grow from it. But, you know, guys, especially religious guys who say, bad girl, they're the ones who are making bad karma. Anyway, in YouTube you can find a video guiding us to see our past regression. Is it a kind of meditation? Sort of. You know, because it does actually allow you to let go, because you're looking at some video, you're listening to someone else, so you surrender, you know, your control and listen to someone else. That's why it gets peaceful. In a still forest pool, Ajahn Chah says, even after you stop formal sitting, you should continue to contemplate whatever you see. How does one do that? What's the difference between contemplation and thinking reflection? Remember I held something up? I held up the teddy bear before. What's this? When you say teddy bear, white, you know, cute or whatever, that's thinking. When the thinking stops and you can see it without thought, that's contemplation. But I'll do that again tomorrow when I do more about insight. Next question, two to go. The well-practiced monks and nuns always wear a smile on their faces. How can I also attain such inner peace and serenity? Yes, it's easy. 20 push-ups every morning. And after a while it gets stuck. You're exercising your smiley muscles. Now how can you have a smile if you don't exercise? Because sometimes these muscles get weak. So you can exercise every morning. And you'll have exercise your smiley muscles. After the expanding bliss feeling, I felt it only to be more peaceful. The bliss and tingling sensation is a disturbance. My mind inclined towards peaceful. The blissful feeling slowed down. It collapsed into a darkness with peaceful feeling only. My breath slowed down accordingly. It seems that it could eventually stop. Quite scary. That's quite scary. I'm sure that many people listen to this. Oh, why can't I get expanding bliss? All I ever get is just thoughts and tiredness and hunger at this time of night. If I could only have a blissful feeling just once. So, are you going well? Don't be scared. Carry on. See what happens. It's all great. So, see what happens. And sometimes, the way to overcome fear, scariness, just go a little bit further. Every time. And then you can come back again. And then next time go a little bit further into the peace. And then come back again. You just, you know, little by little, you accustom yourself to places you've never been before. To states of mind which are just really wonderful, but you know, you're not quite sure about. When you go back again and again and again, you get used to it and it's not scary anymore. So you accustom yourself to, you know, to the strangeness. And then the fear vanishes. There we go. That is all the questions for tonight. And I'll finish at 15:15, which is good, not too late tonight. So those of you who really want to follow the Dhamma, those of you who really want to get enlightened in this lifetime, the full moon is out. The opportunity is there. But for those of you who aren't so conceited, for the humble ones, you can go to bed. Have a nice night. See you in the morning. Oh, sadhu. Sadhu! Wait for it. Sadhu! Very good. Okay. Have a nice evening. I try to do a different sadhus every evening. It's very tough. teddy bear's really tired. If you want to, you can take the teddy bear into your room with you. Cuddle it at night. As long as you bring it back in the morning.